Hey, it's your Pretty Much Pop 2025 Christmas episode, this time focusing on Christmas romance films. You know, you probably know the Hallmark, the Lifetime formula, but it has become a wider thing. Netflix has done a ton of them. They're on other channels as well. This is Mark Lintzenmeyer. I'm just stopping in town for a couple days. I can't stay for Christmas.
This is Al Baker, everybody's Christmas prince.
I'm Sarah Lynn Brook, and I enjoy twinkly lights, decorating a Christmas tree, snowball fights, and a hunky guy wearing a flannel shirt as much as the next person.
This is Lawrence Ware, and I cannot wait to go back to my big city job. Oh, wait a minute. They let me go. I now have to move to the small town. I'm not going to fall in love with this person. I can't fall in love with this person. But you know what? I cannot resist falling in love and kissing on Christmas Eve as snow gently falls down to the ground.
I mean, I guess sometimes there is a husband, you know, a boyfriend in the big city that the woman is leaving, but never like a whole, like you learn like, oh, this is a mother of four, but she has decided that she's in love with the small town life.
It's always the guy who has a kid or two, but not her.
That's true. It's never the woman. That is a very good point. And I didn't know that many dads were like single dads out there in these streets. It's kind of strange.
Often they're widows.
That's right. They are widowed all the time.
That's true, because they've never done anything wrong in their life. And the plot you were describing to me, Lawrence, I don't know if it's based on a real movie, but it seems fairly high stakes. Like I don't remember many things as upsetting as somebody getting fired.
No, many people have gotten fired, and that is literally the plot of 85% of these movies. And trust me, you know, spoiler alert to the people listening, I freaking love these movies. Like, I love all of them. I watch them constantly during the Christmas season. I start watching them before Thanksgiving. That's how much I love these movies. And so, I am very astute. I am prepared for this conversation. I'm ready to go.
This is your turf.
This is me. This is all me.
I know we had said, look, it's this thing that Hallmark created, Lifetime created. I had a hard time even getting a hold of. I realized this morning, like, I guess my Samsung TV that comes with a bunch of streaming channels that, you know, you just avoid because they have commercials. They probably have a Hallmark channel that I could have just been watching these streaming. And I think that is where I had Laura Osnes of Broadway fame as a guest on my music podcast. And she had done a few of these movies with Hallmark. So I watched, I can't even remember which of them it was, A Homecoming for the Holidays. Jeez, these things have such freaking terrible generic names for the most part.
Oh my gosh. I need you to put some respect on the names of these movies. Like, I am not going to sit here and let you defame. The generic name is part of the charm of the movie.
My daughter has been home for a little while after graduating, and she and my wife were very much game for watching not the worst. Again, I had to like look on. I see that Disney, I guess, owns Lifetime and Hallmark at this point. At least that's the impression I got.
I wasn't aware of that.
That's the impression I got from the Family Guy spoof of these types of movies that just came out. That they were throwing around Hallmark and Lifetime in such a free way that I thought Disney had bought up all this stuff. Somebody can confirm that for me. So I ended up just watching mostly stuff on Netflix the women in my house actually wanted to watch.
Sure, that's why you were watching it. Of course you don't want to admit to the fact that you were watching it because you wanted to watch it. Of course your daughters and your daughter and your wife made you watch it. Mark, just be who you are, man. Come out the closet, be who you are, be yourself. It's okay to say that you enjoy these movies.
I had a little bit of a Scrooge sort of experience in being resistant.
And then your heart softened.
And I'll tell, I had a specific one actual Lifetime movie that I watched that I will get into later, but I want other people to give their sort of background with this. Sarah, where are you at?
I have to say I don't have much of a background with these movies. So this is... new territory. This is territory I have actively avoided. And it was probably for all of the reasons that you would assume, that I'm snobby. I'm not in middle America, I guess. I don't know.
You snobby? I would never say that.
You would never say that about me? Okay, that's good. But I get why they're popular. And actually, it turned out to be kind of good timing for this because my kid had her tonsils out on Monday and we ended up watching a couple of these movies together and it was really fun. So just like Mark, like watching it with like a 21-year-old kid is actually a really good time. And I even fell asleep for 20 minutes last night in front of one of these movies. Not only did I fall asleep, I was drinking a glass of red wine. I was actually so in the zone. I fell asleep for 20 minutes. I woke up 20 minutes later. I knew exactly what was going on. I didn't, you know, it was, these movies are so predictable.
Yeah,
that I knew exactly what was happening already. And it was just kind of delightful.
And that's part of the charm. Yeah, I agree.
That's part of the charm. That's exactly right. So I would not besmirch anyone joy in watching these movies. I get it. I totally understand why people love these movies. I don't know that I need to watch any, you know, a bunch more, but I understand why people really, really love watching these Christmas movies.
Like Sarah, I've got no history with these movies at all because I rightly thought that I wouldn't like them and they'd have nothing to offer me. And I've watched a few of them and I was completely right. They're all real bad in terms of what we usually look for in a movie.
They are. They really are.
I promise, Lawrence, I'm not trying to pick a fight, but they are bad movies. In terms
I
of
don't
what
disagree.
We usually look
they
for
are
in a movie.
Bad. They are bad.
But
yes.
I was fascinated by a couple of key questions. The first is what the genealogy of exactly this kind of movie is, because it seems like they're suddenly everywhere and the formula is so tight that it seems like suddenly everybody landed on the same exact formula for making these kind of movies. And there are hundreds of these things and dozens of them get made every year. And it's just perplexing to me why that's the case. And secondly, just I was really curious about the economics. Like, how is it a good idea economically for Hallmark to make dozens of original TV movies every year? Like, how does this make sense as a business? And after having watched a few of these films, done some research, I still don't like these movies at all, but I do respect them an awful lot more than I thought I would do. Like, the conditions under which these people are making these movies is insane. The kind of budgets they're working with are minuscule compared to anything that you'd see in a movie theater. But what comes out is it's never good, but it is always like solid 4-star material. And that's something that you can really, really respect. And it fulfills a really particular kind of function as a product, which Sarah kind of alluded to before, but I'd like to talk about a bit more. None of those functions is being a good movie, which is even more interesting. Like, they don't have to be good movies in order to do what they need to do. And that alone makes them really, like, fascinating to me. But they're all bad. And I didn't enjoy watching any of them, really.
Is that 4 out of how many stars, Al?
10. Like, no, you're right. Because 4 out of 5 would have been atrocious. But like 4 or 5 out of 10 was where they seem to solidly rate at like 50% pretty much everywhere, but very few lower than that.
And that kind of tracks with like what you see on Metacritic and all that kind of stuff, which I think that question is really interesting because you're looking at movies that are predictable, they rely on tropes, they're not very diverse, and they're actually not even religious, even though they're Christmas movies. They're not like really religious movies. They're not talking about Jesus or something.
That'd be too risky.
That would be too risky. And that would be even political, you know, they're not political at all. So all of the measures that you would put up against a movie that you would go and pay to see in a movie theater don't necessarily really apply. But the popularity of these movies is just overwhelming.
Can I talk? I haven't been able to talk yet, Mark. Am I allowed to talk and be the voice of the people?
Please do.
You know, because I'm here with a whole bunch of snobby individuals. Sarah, I didn't realize, but apparently she's a snob. Mm-hmm. She's an East Coast liberal snob. And of course, we knew Al was going to be snobbish because Al is from, you know, Britain and people from Britain
I mean, Sarah's not even East or West Coast. Sarah is both kinds of liberal elite.
That's very true. She is from California. That is very true. So she's all around, but she is not a middle of the country person like I am. And, you know, no, okay, let me just be honest. These movies are not good. I would never say that these are legitimately great movies. Would I go to the movie theater to watch any one of these movies? Absolutely not. Do I think that these movies should be in the movie theater?
Would you
theaters?
Be able
Absolutely
to watch any
not.
Of these movies in
of
the theater?
Of course. I mean, I'm sure they've tried to put something in the movie theater before, but I would never do that.
I could see a movie theater in a like Christmas tree lot where they're just constantly playing, that somebody is just playing them on their big screen TV and you can just mill in and out as you go.
I could definitely see something like that. But I think Sarah hit the nail on the head, and I'm happy that she got over her snobbishness to see this. The reality is that it's like comfort food. I mean, that is exactly what it's like. It's like comfort food. You know what you're going to get. You can go to sleep on it, wake up, and you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen at the end. You can second screen it, so you can have it on the TV and you're playing on your phone, whatever. Like, that is the whole point of these films. And are they good? No. Are they well made? No. Is the acting good? No. Now, every now and again, I'm happy to see some people that I hadn't seen in a while, because they kind of pop up every now and then as the stars of these films. I like the ones that kind of feature that a little bit more diverse, because they can be very white, and there's been an attempt to kind of diversify it here recently. So there's a lot of black ones and things like that, but they're not great. They're not even good, but are they fun? Yes. Are they silly? Yes. Do I cry at the end of some of them? Yes, absolutely. And the reason why, now I don't cry, but I tear up. It gets dusty.
That's sweet.
My allergies start bothering me, because the reality is that this is fun, man. It's fun. It's sweet. Honestly, I love love. I really do. I like to see people come together at the end, even though I know it's manufactured, even though I know it's silly. I enjoy it. And Christmas time is the time of where things like this can happen and it's fun. So, I mean, look, I've been watching these movies for well over 10 years. I was there when it kind of got started, and then there was like an explosion of these films everywhere around 8 or 9 years ago. Well, maybe 7 or 8 years ago. It just exploded. And Hallmark is still kind of the gold standard, but you saw that Netflix is trying to tip its toe in it. And you saw that places like Amazon, they're trying to, because the popularity is there. They're very, very cheap, and they're very watchable, and people love watching these movies. And it draws people to, like, honestly, who watches the Hallmark Channel any other time of the year but during Christmas time? I don't know what people do. It's on everywhere during the Christmas time and the holiday season. So, I mean, look, they're very easy to make. They don't cost much. They're not controversial. They're comfort food. They're trying to kind of play with the established kind of storytelling that people like Tony Curtis established, and like the more serious romantic comedies that take place during Christmas time. But they're light, they're silly, they're fun. I love them. I will not apologize to anyone. I will not stand for any kind of slander. Let me have my fun.
So let me correct myself. I was able to Google the requisite 2 seconds while you guys were talking. So I was thinking that Disney owned Hallmark because of this Family Guy thing, which I think is very instructive. It's a comment on exactly what we're talking about. And the title of that is Disney's, Hulu's, Family Guy's, Hallmark Channel's, Lifetime's Familiar Holiday Movie. And it does but I see that Disney and Hallmark have partnered for lots of things, but Hallmark is its own company. Disney does not own it yet. The Hallmark Channel launched in 2001, aired its first original Christmas movie, Santa Junior, in 2002. 2006 is The Christmas Card. It was a massive hit, was sort of the tipping point, as you're saying, yes. So, Lawrence, about 10 years ago, and they started doing marathons starting in 2009 with tons of these things. So that said, I don't have the channel, right? I cut the cord. I don't have cable. So I didn't want to like pay whatever extra for the add-on. So I was like searching, and I will tell you the only really authentically one of this genre that I saw was called Rebuilding a Dream Christmas from 2020, AKA, this is actually what it's listed in IMDb as Christmas Come Home, also known as My Christmas Wish. So this film involved three of these titles. So this is the hardworking woman. She just lives in the city, and she doesn't celebrate Christmas, and she eats alone on Christmas. And so her boss is like, I'm going to give you the big account. But wait, she still owns the home from her dead grandmother in the small town where she grew up. They call her from the historical society and say, you have a historic home and its window is broken. And so you have to come home right now to get the paperwork approved to have this fixed up, because that's sort of the bylaws about if you have a historical home. And so she just has to go home during the Christmas season and is, you know, torn away from working on the big deal that would really make her career. What'll happen? when the hunky guy in her hometown that she used to like when she was little is there to help her with repairs. What will happen? And then I just like, after watching 5 minutes of that, and it's really like objectionably forceful music, like the music is much cheesier and just more intrusive. I was like, this is making me physically sick. I cannot actually watch the rest of this movie. I already see where it's going. It's just like Infinite Jest, where David Foster Wallace stopped writing the book because he said, look, I already gave you all the information. You can figure out what happens. You don't need the rest. I'm going to respect you as a reader. And, 1,000 pages is enough. I'm going to stop. But I did watch the rest of it this morning and it was okay. That's my Scrooge turnaround moment.
Well, I'm happy. Oh, by the way, I misspoke. It wasn't Tony Curtis. It's Richard Curtis. That's the guy who did Love Actually.
Yes.
But I saw that movie when it first came out, Mark.
Whoa.
And it was delightful. It's delightful. It's a delightful little ditty. And you know where it's going. You know what's going to happen. But that's the whole point. Like, you want to know where it's going. Like, you want... Because you don't want to, like, be doing something and it's on in the background and all of a sudden someone dies and it's a big twist. And there's a big mystery and you got to pay attention now. Like, that's not what you want during Christmas. You're making cookies. You're making pies. You're making whatever the hell that is that Al said that British people make during Christmas time last year.
Black I don't pudding. Know what it's
called. Yeah, that whatever that is.
Figgy pudding.
Whatever mince the hell
pies.
He said.
Mince pies, what it was. It. Yeah, yeah. I've had my
the hollowed out skulls of my enemies.
And you don't want to have to pay attention, but you want to look up and be delighted and be in the Christmas festive spirit. And the movies do that.
That movie clearly falls into one of the key subgenres, which is the...
There's subgenres?
No, I think there are, because I wanted to...
Yes, there definitely
one
are.
One of my movies, well, like one and a half of my movies fits that subgenre. The first one that I watched, which I think was also my favorite, was The Christmas Inheritance, which is a kind of spin on the city woman goes to the rural hometown thing, because this is a feckless, spoiled socialite who needs to learn hometown family values so that she can take over the family business. And then, of course, she goes home, meets one of the guys who has turned up for the last two seasons of The Office, who's the slightly damaged local boy with a heart of gold, and the rest of the movie plays out. But then another one of the movies I watched was A Christmas Prince, and that's another real firm subgenre,
yeah,
which is Christmas royal adventure stories, either with or without a twin switching
That's kind of
motif.
A good point.
That's Interesting. Optional.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
But are there any other kind of key, that in terms of what we've all watched recently, are there any kind of other subgenres that people noticed?
So Jake Lacy, not just from The Office, from, the douche on White Lotus season one, is the...
Yes,
so this is one of the Netflix. This is not a pure Hallmark thing.
Yeah, this is a little bit more highbrow.
Yes, no, this is a pretender. It's also it's more of the definitely, like, they had high resolution cameras. They had maybe 2 weeks to write the script.
Yeah. No, you guys are laughing. I'm serious. Like, they normally they have like a week or two. Like, honestly, a week or a couple of days. Yeah.
And Lawrence, when you were summarizing that thing earlier on, you said that they're not well made, and I think you're doing them a disservice. These movies are as well made as they can be, given how long these guys have got to work on them.
The one you're talking about, the Netflix ones, those are a little bit more highbrow. But I'm talking about the ones that are like legitimate Hallmark, legitimate Lifetime.
I watched one that was a legitimate Hallmark movie, and that was Haul Out the Holly.
I remember that one.
Haul Out the Holly is spun... three sequels, I think. Most recent is Haul Out the Halloween, so they're branching out into other holiday seasons. But, like, that movie is full of recognizable character actors from TV, and the star was a minor character in Mean Girls.
That's right.
That movie, I think, was made for, like, $2 million. So they had one go at everything. And it's so impressive to see people...
That's a good point.
Like, pull off mediocre with absolutely nothing to work with. Like, that's another, there's a whole other kind of professionalism. Like, it's one thing for your guy to spend 2 weeks building the perfect Christmas family home set. It's another thing for your guy to spend 2 days and build the two sets that you need to make your entire movie. It's a whole different kind of skill.
Let's do our ad break. It's time to talk about Rula. Are the holidays getting you down? Is life in general getting you down? Do you maybe want to deal with those lingering issues that are getting in your way? Maybe it's time at last to try therapy or get back to therapy. Our sponsor, Rula, provides an easy way to do that. You just go to their website, answer some questions. It will connect you with one of their over 15,000 therapists and psychiatrists nationwide. You will schedule your appointment right there in the app. Maybe as soon as tomorrow, you will have your session over the internet from the privacy of your own home. You don't even have to get dressed. And best of all, Rulo partners with most major insurance plans. So if you have insurance through your employer, through Obamacare, through your parents, the average copay is going to be $15 per session. But depending on your benefits, the copay could be zero. And Rulo is committed to supporting you and staying with you every step of the way in your mental health journey. If you're having an issue with your therapist, they're going to fix that. You're going to monitor your progress. They're going to help with medication management. Listen, when I was a younger person, man, I should have been getting therapy. But the cost, the inconvenience, really the shame kept me just coping on my own. Don't do that. Use this ad today as a life-changing opportunity. Thousands have already trusted Rulo to support them on their journey toward improved mental health and overall well-being. Head on over to rulo.com/PMP to get started today. After you sign up, they ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them our show sent you. Go to rula.com/PMP and take the first step toward better mental health today. You deserve quality care from someone who cares. I would like to tell you about Masterclass. Masterclass is a website. It's an app which you can experience from your phone, from your TV. Treat it like a podcast or a totally immersive experience. It collects over 200 classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. You get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. Many, many relevant to this podcast, like Aaron Sorkin on screenwriting, James Cameron on filmmaking, the Duffer Brothers on developing an original TV series, Judd Apatow on comedy, Martin Scorsese, David Lynch, Ron Howard, Samuel L. Jackson, Ken Burns, the list goes on. But I decided this time to turn left and check out Spice Up Your Life with the Art of Sex Appeal by author and sexologist Shan Boodram. Shan teaches you how to discover your turn-on triggers, explore solo play, and have better, hotter, more passionate sex. So there's a little holiday assignment for you, maybe something to highlight as you use this as a last-minute gift. Seriously, I've gotten a lot out of Masterclass classes over the years. They're something that every member of your family will enjoy. Plans start at $10 a month, billed annually, and there is no risk. Every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See for yourself why one Masterclass member says, "This is by far the best money I've spent in a long while." Masterclass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head to masterclass.com/pretty for the current offer. That's 50% off at masterclass.com/pretty. Masterclass.com/pretty.
You think about the production design on these movies because they are designed to be on in the background, you know, in your living room as you're, maybe you are decorating your own Christmas tree or whatever, or, you know, looking at your phone. But the production design has like every single room in their fake houses is beautifully decorated, decorated to the T, so much so that they have these huge trees, they have these gigantic ornaments hanging from everything, the outside lights are all on, they even have lights like in their bathrooms, in their kitchens, there's all this Christmas paraphernalia lying around. None of it, again, smacks of religious stuff. It's all trees and ornaments and presents. It's not angels or manger sets or anything like that. It is so specific. It looks like the inside of Crate and Barrel during the holiday times, you know, but it's like times 100. And I cannot believe, like, with the budgets that they have, just like you said, Al, I totally agree. I am actually pretty wowed by what they can come up with the budgets that they have. And my guess is because of where it's filmed, I think many of these are filmed up in Canada, that they're probably reusing a lot of this stuff, is my guess. I haven't seen enough of these movies, honestly, to actually know. But my guess is that they're reusing a lot of the same sets and stuff.
Same sets, same scripts, same...
It's not the same script.
Swapping out the actors from 90210 with the actors from Full House.
Is it the same ski lodge that is used for, you know, many of these films?
Yeah, particularly with Hallmark, I've noticed that they tend to reuse the same locations. Honestly, legitimately, Sarah, I've noticed like a Christmas tree being reused. Like, really? It's almost, yeah, I've noticed it. Because there was one Christmas tree that was very, very noticeable, and it was very unique in the way that they decorated it. And I saw it in another movie. I was like, yeah, I've seen that before. You know, so yeah, I've seen that. I can't tell you what the movies were. Back in the 30s, 50s, in Hollywood, they had like a system where they would churn out these movies back to back to back, reusing sets, reusing whatever. And it's very similar to that, I bet, with these Christmas movies. Like, it very much feels like there's a whole system there. There's a group of people who are in a room writing these movies. There's another group of individuals that they use consistently to direct these movies because they have a same kind of feel. There's never anything different about the direction, kind of a bland kind of direction. The Christmas decorating is always the same. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's actually cold or there's actual snow on the ground. They very easily kind of put this fake snow in. So I definitely see like a system in place to make these movies. But as I said, I don't mind them. I don't mind them with the old noir movies that reuse sets. I don't mind them with these movies.
It's important for these movies that they're not interesting or creative. If you've got 2 weeks to shoot your TV movie, you just can't afford to do anything that might end up in you requiring reshoots. Like, you can't get coverage to make any interesting edits. You can't let the actor have 3 takes to work out what they're going to be doing. It is really fascinating. It's just like we were saying at the beginning, like the usual yardsticks by which you would judge an output just don't apply. It's got to be, but it's such meticulously crafted mediocrity, and it's absolutely got to hit all these points. And if any of them were more interesting, then they would be failing at what they are.
That's so true. Because, I mean, if you imagine like, you know, a director coming in with a point of view, that's just not going to work for this style of movie. And even like, I tried to kind of mix it up. So I watched Champagne Problems on mm-hmm. Netflix, you saw that too?
That's the new one.
So yeah, I watched mostly new movies. And that's the one with Minka Kelly. She's, you know, high business exec going to France and falls in love with the son of a champagne magnate. And that one seemed kind of on the higher end of things. It seemed like it was shot really well. But again, it didn't really have much of a point of view, but it looked like it had more of a budget than some of the others.
And it wasn't terrible.
No, it wasn't terrible, you know, and I'm glad that Minka Kelly is getting work. You know, it was nice to see her. But I saw 2 Lifetime movies. One was Christmas on the Alpaca Farm, which had no one I recognized in there. And I just thought, this looks like a very middle-of-the-road Christmas movie.
I don't know that one.
Deep cut.
You stumped me with that one.
Okay, that one was bonkers. So it has, again, the lady who comes from New York City. She's a fashion person, and she makes sweaters. So she makes these sweaters that are made out of alpaca wool. And she goes to the place that makes the alpaca wool. And what I was kind of delighted by is that they had actual alpacas in the movie, this really cheaply made movie. And it was maybe the cleanest farm I've ever seen in my life. And of course, she has, you know, the very loyal best friend who just wants her to meet somebody nice. And she's got the high, you know, the big career. She lives in New York City, you know, and then she's got this guy who literally works on a farm in the middle of nowhere. And it's very snowy. And everybody wears the best sweaters you've ever seen in your life. Like the color coordination. I was like, oh, chef's kiss to the color coordination. I mean, every single shot looked just like it was absolutely mapped out, which I'm sure it totally was. But anyway, so that one was kind of hilarious. And I didn't see any actors in there. And maybe they had done stuff. I did do a quick search on the actors who were in that. And they hadn't really been in anything very prominent. I was expecting to find somebody who was, you know, on One Tree Hill or something. But I didn't. And then the other one I saw was a Carpenter's Christmas Holiday, which did have some named characters. I can't remember their names right now, but it was almost the same as the alpaca farm, except you just sort of swap out the alpaca farm for a guy who makes stuff out of wood. And otherwise, it's the exact same story. And it had basically the same budget. It had, you know, this chaste kiss at the end. It was, you know, nothing super sexy. And then I also watched on Hulu, Joy to the World. And that one was fun. I watched that one with my daughter. And that's about like a Christmas, like an influencer who makes up, you know, she's a single orphan who is an influencer, and she makes up like she has like this whole family with kids, and she does all of this Christmassy stuff when in fact she's a big fake. And of course, they want to go and film her in her house with her, you know, so she has to make up a fake family. And of course, she falls in love with Chad Michael Murray, who poses as her husband. You know, there's these ridiculous plots. That one didn't look like it was, it looked like it was probably more expensive than the Lifetime ones, but less expensive than the Netflix ones. So Hulu's got some money to burn.
I wonder if even the Lifetime ones, because it's been so successful now, like the one you mentioned now, I thought was from 2022, and it seems like it maybe has more budget, that it is not as thoroughly mediocre as the ones when Hallmark was just sort of creating this thing that was going to be its brand, you know, with as low a budget as possible.
I mean, I really hope not, because Call Out the Holly is an absolutely dire movie. So if that represents... I'm just trying to look at what the budget is, because...
Who looks for the budget of Hallmark movies? And you got your strength. One thing that I do think is interesting is how sexless almost all these movies are.
Yes.
While simultaneously being very romantic, or at least like trying to be romantic. Because you want to be able to watch these movies with your kids and whatnot in the holiday season. And so I guess sex is not okay during Christmas time? I don't know.
Falling on the snow together and accidentally being face-to-face, that's okay.
That's okay, but like, even then, they usually don't kiss. Like, it usually, like, they're about to go in for the kiss, and it's about to get hot and heavy, and then some kid's like, I broke my Christmas tree! Whatever, right?
That's
and
so a trope. That's one of off. The tropes, is that almost yeah. kiss, like, around two-thirds of the way through.
Absolutely. Well, no, that's usually, like, halfway of the way, because sure. two-thirds of the way through what happens is that they're together, and then something happens to tear them apart, and then they have to kind of figure out how to get back together.
You're totally right, Lawrence. That's a halfway mark.
That's when the acoustic guitar music kind of comes in, and they're trying to figure out, right? And this is usually happening on Christmas Eve. And I'm shocked not just these Christmas movies, all Christmas movies, how much stuff happens on Christmas Eve. Like, it is always a very packed time. But nevertheless, they're very sexless, and that's always interesting to me. I don't know why... I'm not saying you got to show sex or anything, but like even a cutaway scene where they might have gotten it on, they don't even do that. That's always interesting to me.
It's a part of the safety, the mandated risk aversion. The whole system only works because every movie is guaranteed to get a particular rate of return in terms of the audience that they can guarantee. If you do anything that's going to jeopardize that audience share, the whole system falls apart. You've got to make sure that nobody is going to mind sitting through these films.
I mean, that's right. But when you think about the Christmas movies that we love, Christmas Vacation, Elf, Love Actually, there's sex there.
No, you're right. But nobody loves these movies in the same way. They're not designed to be loved in the same way. I keep thinking about Christmas crackers, which serve a similar kind of social function around Christmas time. They're a lowest common denominator thing, like the jokes in a Christmas cracker, lowest common denominator. They're supposed to make nobody feel bad is one of the huge... like motivating factors of a lot of Christmas rituals. Nobody's going to mind it. Nobody's got to feel bad. And you can't take any creative risks. You've got to have like grandmothers in New York and grandmothers in Oklahoma have both got to be able to sit through them. And dads have got to be able to ignore them. It's got to be for everyone. And that means it can't be for anyone in particular. I'm sure there are people who genuinely love these films, but they are.
Yeah, you know. You're talking to one, sir.
But not in the same way, right? You like Elf more.
No, not the same way. Yeah, no. Yeah.
Can I ask a related question? So it was one of the charges of the Family Guy thing that they were, especially in showing it in certain parts of the country, that they were very sparing about including any black people.
Yeah.
But I didn't notice that on the newer ones, on the Netflix ones, even on the one that I mentioned, it seemed like they had gotten the memo about diversity and that was all fine. Lawrence, in watching these older ones, did you notice like, which would make it even more surprising to me because there's so many things that we watch that you're like, there are no black people involved in this at all. So I have no interest in it because it doesn't. So do you like these older ones despite this or is that just not something you've noticed?
Okay, for the record, it's never because no black people are involved. I don't like it. Like there's plenty of movies and stuff that I watch that have no black people and I still enjoy them quite a bit. Casablanca, well, I guess there is a black guy in there, but Casablanca being, those kind of films being hallmarks of that. However, I will say yes, and originally when I watch these movies, because it's not just the lack of black people, it's the lack of any kind of diversity.
Yeah.
Like whatsoever. Right. Even ethnic white people, there's just a lack of that. Right.
It would scare, you know, what Al was saying about their target audience. Like we absolutely, this is our very narrow demographic that we are aimed at. And if we do anything to alienate them, if we do any sort of tipping our hat to specifically liberal values or whatever, we're going to alienate. So we really have to be more careful and conservative in this kind of movie than any other.
Yeah. And it's not even liberal values. Like there's not even like a menorah. There's not like no speak of Hanukkah. Like, it's just, it's very, and it's not even like an Italian mm-hmm. Christmas, whatever, right? Like there's not, you know, we're going to mass for Christmas. Like, none of that is happening. Every now and then there's a church, but it's not geared towards a particular kind of ethnicity in any kind of significant way. So that did turn me off at first, because I don't like blandness, because that's what this is. It's like very bland vanilla, not even like spicy vanilla bean. It's just like home-style boring vanilla. Right. And I don't like that. But as the years went on, they begin to incorporate more distinctiveness. And I kind of appreciate that. And even though they oftentimes have sometimes black people, they're not particularly black. Like they could, it's hard to explain, but they could easily be white people, but they just happen to be black. And that does rub me the wrong way sometimes. But I don't bring my politics to my Hallmark Christmas movies.
Because, I mean, I would hesitate to guess again that when whoever's writing the script is writing the script, they are not able to write for a particular
probably not
race of cast member. They're not going to be able to count on anyone in particular speaking the lines that they're writing.
But it's also heteronormative. So you don't, yeah, see, I mean, they're starting to catch up. There are some stories about gay couples now, but it's very, very slow. Even as far as like class, all of the characters, at least that I've seen, were all very well off. They were either rich or they were one level below that, you know? So it's people who have tons of money. So you're not seeing people who are also even specifically New York. Like you're not seeing somebody from Brooklyn, you know, or you're not seeing somebody from Louisiana. You're not seeing that. You're really seeing people who are, or if they are from the South, it's sort of like a general South, you know, it's very general so that you can appeal to, I think, the maximum number of people.
No politics invoked at all to be never specific enough to evoke anything difficult.
No, but I also think too that despite the fact that this particular genre is very, very white, very, very classist, and also a little, not homophobic, but it's very straight, a lot of people who are not those things enjoy this genre, you know, which I think is really interesting because it is, they're trying to make it basically like the McDonald's of movies.
McDonald's is exactly the right comparison because it is efficient and focused and targeted and industrialized to the exclusion of what of the kind of value that you would traditionally associate with the product, like food or as movie. If you say they're not homophobic, I think it's probably textbook homophobia. They're literally scared to have gay people in the worlds that they're creating, which feels pretty homophobic to me.
Yeah.
It's obviously sad, but it's also not surprising. And maybe one of the most interesting things is because their trademark kind of tone and ambience is blandness and mediocrity, it's interesting that what blandness and it kind of illuminates that what blandness and mediocrity amounts to in our culture is white, upper middle class, heterosexual, and that kind of boringness.
But I will say a interesting twist that I've started to see here recently, particularly on Hallmark. I don't even know if you guys watch these movies, but they were huge. Last year was A Holiday Touchdown, A Chiefs Love Story. That was last year. This year, it's A Holiday Touchdown, A Bills Love Story. I'm starting to think they may go through the entire NFL.
Wow. I didn't hear anything about these.
Google it. I guarantee you, they're huge. Like, the Chiefs one came out in 2024. The Bills one came out this year. It's clear that the NFL saw that this was a market.
You hit a guaranteed ad market every year. It's a great idea.
Like, the Chiefs stuff was everywhere. The Bills stuff was everywhere in these movies. Like, they were clearly trademarked. And then oftentimes, well, in each one of the movies, actual NFL players popped up in the movie and were doing a terrible job of acting, but they were there. I'm telling you guys, like, this is a real thing. This is going to blow up.
We haven't really talked about these are so obviously aimed at women, right? It's on the Lifetime channel. It's a,
yeah.
But yet, you know, trying to, it seems like what you're pointing at is like an obvious, oh, no, this has gotten more well known. We can get actually men to sit through these things. Let's give them what they want. Let's give them some football player or something. Or do you think that this is still, oh, no, the women find the football players hot or whatever.
I think that's maybe I can get my husband to watch this one with me.
Maybe. But I mean, I think you're misjudging this a little bit. Women are huge NFL watchers. They're big into football. Like that's a huge demographic of that. And so I think that they are just probably still geared towards women, but they understand, they realize that women are a huge segment of the population that watch these football games. They're just as passionate about it, oftentimes even more passionate about it than men. I think that you know, they're gearing it towards women still.
Do you think it's also related to, like, Taylor Swift, the fact that she's going to marry an NFL player?
Nah, I don't think so.
I was going to make a related point that the NFL are also, you know, they're also a professional provider of hunks.
Which is, kind of required in these movies.
You know, it's a slightly less generous read of how women are being pandered to in the making of these movies.
Yeah, let's talk about the hot guy factor. So a couple of them, that another Chad Michael Murray one that I watched and I'd seen before, but I watched the whole thing, is The Merry Gentlemen, which is, I was telling you about this in the after talk, the Full Monty. It is just basically a Christmas version of the Full Monty. This woman is in the big city. She's like on the Rockettes, basically the equivalent of that. And she goes to her small town and her parents own a bar that's having trouble. So they're like, let's put on a show. Oh, I'll get the handyman. I'll just spur of the moment, volunteer him to be one of our exotic, scantily clad dancers. And then, of course, like everybody else they know, you know, the best friend's husband and whatever, they're all equally hot. And so, and they're all equally willing to dance their booties off. And so this becomes, you know, such a cultural institution that, of course, the bar is saved and she wants to stay in town.
Oh, The Merry Gentlemen. That's what you're talking about. Yeah. Yes. The Merry Gentlemen. Yes. I've seen that. I know that movie.
They're all game.
But there's like long scenes of the guys dancing.
That's a racy one, because normally these movies are G or something like that, or a worse PG. That one was TV-14. That was a little bit more of a scandalous one. I remember that one. And I remember being a little scandalized, because when I watched that, I was watching that with my niece, and she's young. She's like, she's like 3 or 4, because I thought it would be fine. And she just looked at me with her mouth agape, with these men thrusting and gyrating on screen. And I had to
Elvis
immediately turn
to pelvis.
Off.
And this shows why Hallmark is right to never take any risks with the content of their movies. Because if you're putting one of these movies on, it's important that you know that there is not going to be anything that you have to explain to your toddler.
That's so true, because I definitely
that
had to have a conversation.
That is exactly right.
I had to have a conversation. You're
sure.
Right.
So most of these Netflix ones that I watched, that sounds like others watched as well, like Champagne Problems or whatever, are, you know, acknowledgments of how big a thing this is, but trying to extend the audience, trying to be a little self-aware about it so they can be intentionally cheesy. Like, I don't know that the Hallmarks are intentionally cheesy. One of the other ones I watched that we knew was going to be bad, bad, bad was Mistletoe Mix-Up, starring Joey Lawrence and his two brothers. Anybody else watch this?
That one passed me by.
Of course I watched it. What are you talking about?
I mean, I guess these guys have a podcast together, and like, strangely, their mom, their real life mom, is in it playing their grandmother. So that the woman they have playing their mom is like very older than they are, so they can pretend to be younger.
Oh, that's not
than
nice.
They are, but the grandmother can be really wacky.
My God.
And but it was like, some of it's just an excuse for them to just like goof around and be brothers together. But it had so many of those. Well, actually, Joey Lawrence's actual wife is in there sort of as a minor part, because it's the two brothers are fighting over a woman. But the main woman they're fighting over, they got like a real actress that they were not related to. So that was a good, a wise choice.
So that they can make her learn her lines.
But it was so, like, I was looking at reviews of it after the, like, this is such a bad movie. Am I going to watch the sequel? Yes, I am.
Absolutely, I am. Oh, and Al, I didn't realize that Holly movie that you told me had a had a third part, because I've seen the original, I've seen the sequel. I didn't know that they did the Halloween version. I gotta watch that.
That just came out, hot off the presses.
Yeah, I gotta watch that. I'm kind of, because that actress, she's in like, I want to say probably 75 of these movies. Her name's like Lacey. I can't say her last name. Yeah,
the lead. Yeah, yeah.
She's in a lot of these movies,
and she's not good, but she's really like clearly professional. Like you know, she doesn't need to do two takes on anything. She probably learns a line, yeah. She hits the mark, she does great.
That's the other one. So last night I was like, okay, we got one more shot. And so we watched Hot Frosty.
Oh, I remember when that came out.
Yeah, I did watch that.
So it's the guy who plays the boyfriend, the fellow's name is Dustin Milligan, who is in his very famous show, is Schitt's Creek. Mm. He's one of the, like the, he's not in the family, but he's like one of the romantic interests in the family. Anyway,
oh, yeah.
he's a hot snowman who comes to life. And hilarity ensues, and it's even got one of the guys from The Office. It has some good comic relief fellows, Joe Latruglio and Craig Robinson. Craig Robinson is sort of the you know, from The Office as the stern sheriff who's trying to bust this Frosty fellow. So it has a little bit of stupid conflict in it, but it definitely plays on the all the women in town think this guy is so hot and he was running around naked for part of it. And, you know, so more racy. And I think there is a definite implication of sex at some point very late in the film. I could be misremembering that.
You know, one other thing I was thinking about with these movies is there doesn't really seem to be a real, like no one's evil. It doesn't seem like that's a thing.
There's no tension lasting longer than 5 minutes, I think, and any certainly not the movies that I watched. There's an annoying woman. I remember a character of an annoying woman who reoccurred, who was like, you know, drawing attention to the main character's shortcomings.
Yeah.
But that's as far as it got. Yeah. Even the big, like, yeah. The all is lost moment was always at most, like, there's a minor misunderstanding that we can clear up in a minute and a half.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right.
I mean, the tension is usually not about someone being evil. I'm trying to think. I can't even think of anyone being evil, really. But it's oftentimes...
it's an accidental lie, right?
Yeah,
so someone put themselves in a position where they had to deceive people.
Or the tension between going back home or staying, you know, like something like that is usually what is the driving force. It's never really evil.
If you think about it, children's holiday programming always has an evil character in it that sometimes is kind of scary. And in these movies, which are for adults, supposedly, don't really have that. They don't have that. They don't have anybody that's, it's everybody seems to be pretty kind to each other, you know, which maybe is part of the, which is definitely part of the formula, right? Because it's, again, it's comfort food, you know?
So is that going to be because it would be riskier to have an evil character or because it would be too much work to have an evil character? Because you're right. It's a family-friendly trope. But is it because if you want to make a good evil character, you've got to put a little bit too much? Like, they need a costume. You need maybe a slightly more theatrical performance, which takes a little bit too much time to get together. I don't know.
I mean, everybody's pretty two-dimensional.
Yeah.
You could have your mustache twirling.
Yeah. You need a little a little grinchiness. That somebody who is a little too bureaucratic or stuck up or whatever, and then they can just see the error of their ways. And then they can be hooked up with
really
somebody
happen.
Hot
yeah.
as well.
You need
and
a Scrooge or something like that.
That's true. Scrooge, yeah.
So your main character is the Scrooge.
I mean, in some
That's
ways,
it.
Yes.
That's the difference, maybe that right? is. That's why there's no evil character, because the antagonist in the movie is the main character's...
is the character, yeah. It's the
character
that we're following
in
around.
In a rejection mm-hmm. of traditional Christian values.
See, now I'm wanting to see a variation on the Christmas Carol where Scrooge actually has a reason that, like, somebody really abused him in the past and messed. And so he has, like, a revenge thing as part of his thing on the world. And
that's not happening. Just
that is happening. You know it. There's going to be a Christmas Story prequel.
The Captain Ahab Christmas.
Tim Burton's had that in pre-production for a few years.
Come on, Chris Nolan. You can get on this.
Well, so relatedly, you know, to have somebody truly evil is to like to have something otherworldly, to have some force of darkness to be defeated, which we're getting into fantasy territory. And so how much actual fantasy, actually, obviously Hot Frosty, Like, there's some magic going on there, and it's not too...
Or real, Santa's real?
Yes.
There's plenty of those.
Or, yeah. Or just Christmas like... Magic is real.
Christmas magic
is one of,
yes.
Is one of the other genres, but it's interesting that, like, it still has to hone... There's still a very clear sense in which that hones to the romance formula. Like, it never diverges into a fantasy adventure story. It's Hot Snowman or... Yeah.
And it's oftentimes in the background, like not even a B story, like a C story, D story, where Santa will like walk by and give like a knowing look. And that's about the extent to which, you know, you'll get any kind of magical anything, any kind of magical realism, whatever, in these kind of stories, these kind of shows, movies, whatever they are. But I'm going to be honest, man, I'm just happy that someone out there, because Salem's Lot, the great television miniseries... I'm just happy that someone on real basic cable, nothing premium, no HBO, no Showtime, just basic cable movies. I'm just happy they're still happening, man. Because you know what? It's been a dark time. The merge of Netflix and Warner Brothers, all this kind of stuff. I'm just happy that we got a basic cable channel still making original movies, original programming. Look, man, you can hate on all you want to. I'm just happy that it's here.
I'm going to be a little more cynical about it and say I think that Hallmark Christmas movies are a troubling omen of what happens when advertising is the only motivation to make media. Because the only reason Hallmark movies exist in the way they do is to sell ads at a particular time of year. Without that, none of this would happen in this way.
That's true.
That's what enables them to make these.
Man, I don't know. I mean, outside of HBO and whatnot, like that's what motivated most of the stuff that we watched that was made on basic cable or whatever. It was the advertising. I don't know if that's unique to Hallmark movies.
That's true, but I mean, sorry, you're right to call me out on it, but in a post-streaming world where most audiences are diversified across streaming platforms, if on TV... The only reason that you can make a program is to sell advertising as opposed to subscriptions. And because the advertising revenues are shrinking so enormously across media, that's the only, I don't know. It seems like a troubling premonition of, like, I think we're going to expect to see many more of these kinds of genres of TV and movies. I think more of our stuff is going to end up looking like this.
These movies aren't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're not going anywhere. But I'm actually really happy to see movies that don't have any big names. You're giving work to actors who wouldn't otherwise have work, maybe. You have, especially since commercials, they haven't totally gone away, but there are far fewer of them. You know, they've sort of moved into the sphere that maybe even soap operas have. You know, you've got writers getting work, you've got directors getting work, you have all of these creators who are actually able to make stuff. And I think that is a good thing. Even if what they're making isn't something that is quote unquote good.
I mean, it's probably not what they want to be making, but honestly, you just kind of try to do what you can, honestly. And most That's people it. Are just working people. They just want to make a living. Not everybody's Christopher Nolan. Not everybody's going to be Steven Spielberg. Sometimes you just want to make a living. And you're able to make a living with these movies. And why not?
Just imagine the diversity of very, very decent made-for-TV movies that we could have had using the same industrial system. And instead, we've got hundreds of exactly the same movie. Like that's
yes.
That I guess is the thing. Like no
and that is sad. That is sad.
So there's so many individual movies that I wanna say a little about that I'm gonna save for the after talk here. So that's patreon.com/prettymuchpop if people want to get in on that. Just a couple things before we go. You know, my wife had seen more of these things than I had early on, and she commented to me before I even really got into it how startling it is to see people who are merely good looking and not stunningly beautiful. that's what you're saying these people that otherwise wouldn't get work. Like they're not great actors, you know, but they passed this audition.
Yeah.
And so like how spoiled are we that the casting agents of the world have made us so used to seeing on, of course there are character actors and people who are not supposed to be, you know, but for main characters, we're just so used to seeing like someone who's jaw-droppingly gorgeous that like to see someone who's just a little pretty, it's startling. So I thought that was
funny. And is that part of the appeal? You know, that's, you can actually literally see yourself in these characters.
Or at least the popular girl from your school and not the,
yeah, exactly.
But again, just get harping on the economics again, I just don't think it's going to be the most important thing when you're casting. Do you want the most beautiful person, or do you want the person that's definitely going to be available and has a reputation for like not holding up shoots and is going to learn all their lines?
That's it.
And is going to be in and out and do the job.
And we'll say yes.
I think we should each leave with a recommendation or two. So we talked about the gay thing. Single All the Way is actually something that now my family is watching yearly. It is, a fully gay on version of this, but has the small town. It has a lot of the tropes, but it has some recognizable actors, including Jennifer Coolidge, doing a very cheesy show stealing thing that probably she would not do now, because now after White Lotus, she is probably out of the budget of this kind of movie. And the other one is Love Hard, which hardly fits this category. It's more just a regular movie. Jimmy O. Yang, who's a comedian, is the main guy. It's sort of a catfishing story. I don't know if it was ever in the theaters, but it was, you know, maybe more in the category of just like a legit good. Well, okay, I see it still has 6 out of 3 stars on IMDb out of 10. So it's not, maybe it's not actually good. All right. Any other recommendations from people? Lawrence, I feel like you have not pulled out a specific movie that was really notable from your vast history.
I would say that probably the absolute number one best Hallmark Christmas movie I've ever seen is An Unexpected Christmas. Came out in 2021. So that one's really good. One that I really enjoyed is a black one. It's called Our Christmas Journey. That has Holly Robinson Pete, I think her name is.
I love her.
And she has a son with autism, and she's a single mother. So that one is a very black one. It's a little bit more, it's not like risque, but it tries to make it legitimately, authentically black, which is one that I appreciated. So those are two that I would recommend.
I wouldn't recommend any of the movies that I've seen.
Ow, God damn it!
But good luck to you. There's loads of them there. I watched,
The
Holiday for the first time. That's a good movie.
The Holiday?
That's a good Christmas romance movie. No, Holiday.
The Holiday. Holiday. He's not doing Hallmark. He's doing real movies.
No. I'm saying watch a real movie. If you want to watch a,
sure.
Watch a real movie. It's just as easy. Just watch the real one.
Then watch This Christmas. Watch Almost Christmas. Watch A Best Man Christmas. Like, if you want to do a real movie, then do a really good black one. How about that?
Yeah, do a real. That's my recommendation. Watch a real movie.
There you go.
Sarah, any final thoughts or recommendations?
You know what? Actually, I would say out of all of the ones that I watched, A Carpenter Christmas Romance actually had two very hot actors, and it was definitely it was one that was not terrible as terrible.
Hey guys, this one got Sarah going. It got her. It was hot not. Beneath the collar. Yeah.
I have to say, out of all of the movies that I saw, this one had an attractive person in it.
The two leads were really, really good looking.
Some smoke shows, guys. If you want a smoke show, watch this one.
Was not quite as chaste as the other ones. So anyway, I would recommend that one marginally.
One of the reviewers is saying Pretty Little Christmas Liars. I guess maybe the main woman is from Pretty Little Liars. I don't know that show so well. So.
Oh,
Pretty Little Liars is amazing.
I hate that show.
All right, let's not get derailed in the last second.
Talk about Pretty Little
Thanks.
Liars.
Merry happy holidays, everybody. Merry Christmas. Watch some TV.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, guys. Watch some good Hallmark movies. Watch them. Don't listen to these Scrooges. Watch them.
Pretty Much Pop is part of the Partially Examined Life podcast network. Get more Pretty Much Pop at prettymuchpop.com. Get bonus content for every episode at patreon.com/prettymuchpop.